Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yes, Love is the Law by The Suburbs. I heard there's going to be a new Suburbs or a Chan album coming out.
There is.
And I heard it's not a bop.
Yeah,
we got an email yesterday that Chan's coming out with something new.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to have him on. Yep. Jay's already been in contact with him. Love him. I can't wait till he can come back in the studio again. You know, he's just so sweet.
I know it.
Love him. Okay, so Taylor Kitsch is 40 years old today. Just FYI, our guy from Friday Night Lights.
I just turned around to look at the man wall because he had such a prominent presence.
Right, yeah. That makes me sad.
We can't look at him.
Yeah.
And he was Tim Riggins on Friday Night Lights. And if you've never watched that, please.
Watch it.
Love yourself and go watch it. Yeah. You'll have the most fun this weekend.
Michael B. Jordan is in it.
I know.
Yeah, no, it's a great show. Jesse Plemons is in it.
Yeah.
There's some, of course, you know, Connie Britton and
Kyle Chandler
is coaching Tammy Taylor.
Oh,
that was a great show.
Oh, we loved it.
Speaking of great shows, I hope that Katie Sagal's new show, Rebel, which is going to be on ABC tonight, Katie Sagal, starring opposite of John Corbett, but the show is very much about her character. And of course, who's Katie Sagal? Well, she was Peg Bundy. She was the mom, you know, Jack's mom, with a very great character story in Sons of Anarchy.
Yep.
And she's an interesting woman. I wanted to try and get her when she wrote her memoir like a couple years ago. And as I recall, she has a very interesting Hollywood life.
So her parents, her dad was an immigrant from Russia, a Russian Jew, and her mom, she finds out when she signs up for, remember those PBS shows that they would find your roots?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So she signed up for, and they did it on her, and her mom was like Amish royalty, if there's such a thing.
Okay.
And so she thought they were going to take her back to Russia and find that part of her history, but they took her to Pennsylvania and did the Amish part of her history. And she said, oh my gosh, I met these long lost cousins and all this kind of stuff. But when she grew up, her dad was in the business and always working on television shows and stuff. And her mom was in the business, was a script person, and they were introduced. I don't know if Norman Lear introduced them, but it ends up her godfather is Norman Lear.
Oh my gosh.
And so her mom, Katie, grew up, she was the oldest of five kids.
So she grew up in the Hollywood.
She grew up in LA, Hollywood, and she was a singer, and she always did some backup singing and some studio singing and everything. Her dad always wanted her to get into acting because he wanted her to get a SAG card, as it were, to get health insurance. And she never wanted to do it because her dad wanted her to do it. But she just said she finally does it and gets a bit part on Columbo.
Yes, I watched that one.
Did you really?
Yeah. She plays like a secretary sitting at a desk or something.
Yeah. And so her mom passed away when she was really young. And so in her 20s, she kind of got into a lot of drugs and alcohol. And she's in recovery. And she is Kurt Sutter, who created Sons of Anarchy.
And Mayans.
And Mayans is her third husband. And they met in AA. And they have a child together, so she's got two grown-up children and a 14-year-old.
Oh, wow.
But this that she had with Kurt. And this Rebel show tonight on ABC at 9 o'clock, she's an advocate playing, you know, Erin Brockovich, it's kind of loosely based on her life. They didn't get her rights to this, but they have her kind of permission. So it was just kind of some technical thing. And John Corbett plays her husband. And Andy Garcia is the lawyer that she consults with, and she's an advocate for the little people.
Mm-hmm.
She's very interesting.
Yeah,
and she struggles with body dysmorphia. What else can I tell you about her?
She does.
Yeah,
is that what she told us?
Yeah,
the audience.
Do they like it? Because we both taped it.
Yeah, we both taped it. Well, I don't know. I'm on the wrong one. I'm looking at the wrong thing. Maybe they don't have it posted yet. But I DVR'd it because I love her.
Right.
And I love John Corbett.
Love. And Andy Garcia. What's not to love about him? He said he's a movie star, but on the set, he tells really great stories about all the directors and people he's worked with. So they're just having a fun time.
And I guess John Corbett gave an interview to Us Weekly, and he's still with Bo Derek. They've been together for like 19 years, but he has known Katie for like 20 years. He said, so we just have natural chemistry. And he told Us Weekly, I don't have to fake it like I've had to do it in the past.
I love that.
Because John, of course, we fell in love with him, if you're old enough, and watched Northern Exposure.
Yep.
When that was on in real time.
And then, of course,
Sex and the City. And
he's the father in All the Boys I've Loved, there's three of those on Netflix. Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't say who he had to fake chemistry with co-stars he didn't get along with, but I'm sure he's not referring to,
SJP
or my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Right. Nina,
whatever her name was.
Yep. What's her name? Come on.
Nina.
I
don't know.
We'll think of it.
Begins with a V.
Vartalios.
I'll look it up. I feel like she shows up in the crossword puzzle.
Yeah.
Mia Vardalos.
There you go.
Yeah, Vardalos. Yeah. Okay.
But it looks good.
It does look cute.
And she said it was unique because they were all set to start filming and then COVID hit because they were just, you know, the way pilots work, you do one and then the networks, whoever decides to buy it.
Pick it up, yeah.
But what happened is, because of COVID, it saved them from that whole waiting period, letting it film and wait. They just ordered 10 episodes.
Oh, okay.
So this is on for 10 episodes. They're still filming. They're only on episode 6.
Yeah.
And she just says it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. I DVR'd it. And then this morning I watched This Is Us. It was a very good episode
this week.
Very good.
And how much do we love Miguel?
This is the first time we really, really
heard from
Miguel.
Him.
In
heard
that
from
way.
Him, yep.
And then the Goldbergs I watched this morning and last night on their show, they paid tribute to the late George Segal. And it was, because he was still on that show and they did a special tribute.
Oh.
And it was really cute. Just really, really good. And each episode ends with a throwback footage from Adam, the guy who created the show, Adam Goldberg,
right.
From his family, like with a real life picture.
Sure.
But they just dedicated to our friend George.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and he was just like the fun, you know. So that happened last night.
Well, here's something else I watched, which was new last night. Home Economics, the ABC sitcom with Topher Grace.
Oh, I DVR'd that.
Okay.
And?
I liked it.
Oh, good.
And it's a story about three siblings, and one of them is just filthy, like Jeff Bezos rich.
Okay.
One of them just has gobs of money and the other two, one's a writer and one is a teacher.
Is that Topher?
No, Topher's a writer.
Okay.
And so it's just the dynamics between the family without any parents around anymore. Mm-hmm. Or their parents are there, but not there. But it ended up being really kind of sweet and fun.
Cute.
I thought it was good.
All right. Rocco, have you watched any network television besides sports?
It's network television is just something I don't watch a ton of. I don't know. I think I'm kind of a snob that way.
We do it because we can tape it.
Yeah, that's a big
deal. It's a big deal.
Well, anything on cable or anything, you know,
commercials now?
Well, but I mean, you tape shows. Like, I'm always DVRing stuff, but
I taped Queen of the South.
South, see?
Teresa came back last night. It was so good.
Right. Because sometimes you want to have a few of an episode and watch them together or whatever.
Yeah.
But Casey is with you, Rocco.
He's become a total snob
right. About network TV. And I'm just like, oh, for crying out loud.
Right. And then I see like a preview for Chad on TBS. I'm like, oh, I'll do that. That's on TBS. That's not a
network. Cable.
Right, exactly.
Isn't that funny? Well, today, this morning, when I was just trying to do some work and watching some shows, Channel 5, Channel 4, Channel 9, and Channel 11 did not work, but all the other cable stations worked. I had to call Comcast. I was having a little problem.
Now, I guess Jon Stewart's got a show coming back.
Yes, he does.
Apple Plus, the problem with Jon Stewart.
He's going to take one topic per hour.
You know who did a great, really good episode? Jon Oliver. I mean, he does every week. There's a reason why he just keeps winning the Emmys.
Because he only has to do 1 hour once a week.
A half hour.
Half hour, you're right.
I think it's a half hour. But he did the best and greatest explanation I've ever seen about the national debt and the deficit.
Oh, I might have to go back and watch.
The difference is between the two of them, and it was just...
Brilliant.
It was brilliant because it was... brought down. Sometimes there's been such scare tactics about those two things.
Right, the debt is huge. Or it's not huge.
Yeah, and there's good debt and there's good deficit and there's bad debt, you know, and it's like it just was, I couldn't possibly explain it, but it made so much
sense. He's so good at that.
He's brilliant. He was really, really good. So
he's so good at that.
Let's see.
Can I tell you a little bit about... the cover of AARP.
Oh, please do.
Okay, so the new...
Joy is an active member, Rocco.
Okay.
I should be doing something with my AARP membership.
Okay, so they have a really good magazine, and Michael Douglas is on the cover, and he looks good.
And Meta Musil is on the back.
And Meta... It is Lori. It is Lori. I know. Well, we got to keep it regular. And he said... he kind of just talks about his first TV gig was the streets of San Francisco in 1972. And back then, you'd shoot 26 episodes a season.
Wow.
They filmed 6 days a week.
Mm-mm.
And he said, it was the hardest job for me, someone who's shy, you know, being out there every day in front of the camera. And he talked...
why do shy people get into acting?
Because they can act like someone different.
Oh, all right.
And then he said, you were mentored by your co-star, the incredible Carl Malden. And he said, in those days, Carl was the first guy. He was the star, and I was secondary. And he moved over and said, come on up, let me help you. And he just took him under his wing, and he shared the spotlight with him. And he said, Carl cared about everybody, and he treated me like a son he never had. And he just said it was so, so great. And he said one of the things he always loved working with was strong women because his mom was an actress, Deanna.
Is that what he's saying?
He said that.
Let me just lift up my eyebrows as high as it will go. Because, of course, Michael Douglas has the biggest reputation of bedding every woman he ever co-starred with.
Well, he's never been threatened by formidable women.
Yeah, well, why?
Kathleen Turner, he's worked with four times, and he's working with her on the Kaminsky method. Glenn
his
Close.
His wife, Deandra, flew to Mexico when he was filming
Romancing the Stone.
Because she had heard how the chemistry between them was intense. If only someone would have alerted Jennifer Aniston. Ha ha.
No kidding.
But I mean, yeah, he's known for getting to his knees, if you know what I mean.
And he talked about, you mm-hmm. know, Fatal Attraction with Glenn Close, uh-huh. working with Sharon Stone and Annette Bening, and other things. Here's one of the things that he said, though, the hardest thing to do as a parent. And he said setting boundaries because remember his son was in prison for 7 years for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said you had to pull away because you're afraid that your kid's going to kill. You know, his son was in deep, deep trouble with heroin. And he just said that there's toughness that's required being a parent, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's a good interview. I enjoyed it. Right, there's more. I'm not going to give it to you, though, because it's time for the Dirt Alert.
All right. We'll be right back.
This is a My Talk Dirt Alert.
Good afternoon.
What's our rainy dirt alert looking like today?
Well, Lori and Julia, we got to go back a couple of years to a story that we were talking about regarding Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez, his now girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And the National Enquirer. Mm-hmm.
That is right. A few years ago, that was the hot gossip. Well, we're getting an update on that story. The National Enquirer, remember a few years ago, published racy texts and suggestive photos that Jeff Bezos sent to Lauren Sanchez. And at the time, it was thought that these photos were leaked to the National Enquirer by Michael Sanchez, the brother of Lauren Sanchez.
Right.
Because they had a close relationship, and they were like, well, this is the most obvious person to leak these photos. Oh, but au contraire. The journalist that...
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
I was working on this story at the National Enquirer is now claiming that the leaks of the texts and the photos came from Lauren Sanchez's then husband, super agent Patrick Whitesell.
Oh.
Did he want out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted out of this marriage. Now, to put this into context for everyone, you might not know Patrick Whitesell, but you probably know some of his clients over at William Morris Endeavor Talent Agency. Gal Gadot, Matt Damon, Keanu Reeves, Ben Affleck, Joaquin Phoenix, and others.
Wow, just to name a few.
Yeah. Just to name a few, exactly. Now, why would he be doing this? Now, according to some new documents, apparently Patrick wanted to get out of divorce free. He wanted to set the table to be like, look, Lauren's cheating on me, infidelity. Let's end this divorce just months before William Morris Endeavor's planned initial public offering.
Oh, so he didn't want any stain on him.
He didn't want stain on him. Also, perhaps he was wanting to cash in on that initial public offering, and he didn't want Lauren Sanchez to get any of that money.
Wow. Right.
She's dating Mr. Jeff.
Right.
Well,
right? She's dating Mr. Jeff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. She still is with Jeff Bezos to this day. They've been in a relationship for several years.
I bet it's absolutely killing her that he's not gotten married. Because his ex-wife got married.
Met and married someone already, and they knew each other, which broke up the marriage, and they're still not married.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes, Jeff Bezos' wife, Mackenzie, has since remarried, and she has found a lovely, I believe he was a school teacher from the Pacific Northwest, and he's going to assist her in giving away her fortune.
Okay.
So there you go.
Is it true? Is it the ex-husband?
Yes, I love this.
This is gossip because a spokesman for Whitesell
is denying it,
telling the Daily Beast that this is categorically untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they're saying it's unfortunately not the first time that we've seen this desperate attempt from Michael Sanchez pointing the finger back at the brother to perpetuate this odd and tiresome circus.
All right.
So believe what you will.
I believe Patrick involved Michael to help him do this and said, I'll give you money or you can keep whatever. You know,
Michael feels like he's a shady character, the brother.
Just as Lauren does.
Yes. Okay. There we go.
All right. So let's move
on. Well, and apparently the ex-husband is too. Yeah. Lauren's husband at the time.
Shade all around. Pull up a chair under their umbrellas.
Shady.
Oh, my goodness. More money. More problems. Let's go over to the world of royal adjacent gossip, I suppose we can call that now. So we're getting some perspective from a person who wrote a book called Harry Conversations with the Prince. This person wrote this back in 2018.
Harry Conversations? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, Harry, colon, Conversations with the Prince.
Okay.
Suggesting that perhaps Meghan Markle will likely fight back against Piers Morgan for calling her a liar.
Good.
Legally.
Oh.
Yes. Now, remember, Meghan Markle has already filed a formal complaint about Piers Morgan over his outburst while hosting Good Morning Britain. That was formal with the British government, Ofcom, their telecom agency. Now a source is saying that Meghan Markle will likely get her lawyers to try to get the better of him as he continues going on his I'm not canceled
press tour. I guess we could call it that.
He is so pathetic. He posted a photo of himself outside of Kensington Palace saying he's heard directly from people inside these walls. And he wants Meghan to name names. Mm-hmm. You start naming names, right. Pierce.
Yeah, exactly. So this biographer is basically saying that, watch out because Meghan Markle has some pretty powerful attorneys behind her. So if he keeps going on and on, perhaps there will be some legal action.
Right. I don't know why he's gone off on this one, although he does do this. This is his reputation. This is why he was so horrible on CNN for the year after he took over Larry King's spot. He's a horrible interviewer. It always has to be about him. Yeah. He's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. If you can't get enough of Piers, he is continuing his column over at the Daily Mail where he's bloviating about the news of the day. So there he is over in that corner.
And he was on with Billy Bush from Extra, who promised he was going to do better. Oh. He's growing a terrible mustache, Billy Bush.
I saw that.
He actually introduced Piers as the most fascinating man in the world and did everything but... You know,
yeah, don't say it. Don't say it. We will get in a lot of trouble because I know what you wanted to say.
Oh, God, he sucked
everything
up to
but comb his hair.
I mean, it was really something else. And I'm like, come on, Billy Bush. Yeah. I thought you were going to be a better man after, Trump and the P-gate and the Access Hollywood bus. And he's got three daughters and he was fangirling over Pierce being on Access. It was pathetic.
Not a good look.
It was pathetic, not pathetic.
Oh, no.
Do better.
Let's talk a little vintage royal gossip.
Okay.
This is concerning Grace Kelly. So there's a new television special over in the UK called Grace Kelly, The Missing Millions. And what this documentary is revealing is that Grace Kelly paid $2 million in dowry to the royal family of Monaco before she got married to Prince Rainier.
What?
Why?
Because that's what you did.
Wow. I don't know that we've ever known this. Have we, Holly?
This is the first time that I'm hearing of this. And so I think that a lot of this stuff is being revealed in this documentary. What they're saying at the time, Princess Grace, when she passed away, the only asset that she had in her name was a cottage in Ireland that was owned by her grandfather. And she had $10,000 in savings. And at the time she passed away, that was only about $27,000.
Oh my word.
Yeah, so she had to pay to be a princess. So,
well, they do love we saw the Princess Grace clothing exhibit at the Albert and Victoria Museum when we spent 28 hours in London.
So fun.
Did you see the wedding dress?
I don't know if the wedding dress was there, but everything, it was a lot of... It was a lovely exhibit. Yeah, it was.
Well, it's been a lot of lovely this afternoon. All right.
She has a theory.
I'm so glad to share a theory with you guys that we all have in common. We can all just realize that we're not alone in this one thing, that we all have anxiety from time to time, if not daily, about. And that is, most people constantly forget their online passwords, including the new one immediately after they've reset it.
Please. And isn't that the truth?
63% of people say this is a reoccurring problem for them. And the theory is, and according to this, at least this survey, that it is very real, that people will actually, 2 out of 3 Americans will actually avoid certain websites or accounts because they know they're going to be asked for their thing. They don't want to bother with resetting it. And so they just avoid going to that because they cannot remember their password.
Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. You've got that Bitcoin.
Remember that guy that forgot all that millions of dollars?
Yeah, right.
Well, I used to subscribe to a password manager. I think it was called Dashlane or something.
Yeah. Right.
But now if you use Chrome and I'm sure other, web browsers or whatever, they save your passwords for you. And so I, and then it autofills. I don't know. I use that a lot. So I don't stress about this as much as I used to.
Right. But I hope you plan on breaking everything, that anytime you upgrade to anything new, breaking.
I know.
Yeah. All your phones. Like, don't, I would say don't do that on your phone if possible.
Right. Because
if you were to lose your phone.
Or if somebody were to guess like your Google password, then they could log in and hack you and blah, blah, blah. And that happens all the time.
Right. But I, and you know, there's a place on your phone to hide passwords
but
too.
But the password anxiety is a real phenomenon because people do get panicked about, and basically 3 out of 4 people said if they ever lost their phone, they'd be locked out of most of their accounts because that is where they keep the storage. Oh,
100%, Lori. 100%.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just something we all have in common. 7 out of 10 Americans feel they have too many passwords, different ones to remember. And because of this, 60% of us are lazy when it comes to creating unique and secure passwords. So, again, this is how, you know, the fraudsters come in and come at you. And now there's all these travel sites that are popping up that the Better Business Bureau is warning people about.
That what?
With amazing travel offers that aren't real. This is the latest.
Okay, that's the latest and the greatest. But
yeah.
The other thing is, after you break up with someone, you are supposed to remember to change your passwords because a lot of time people share passwords. That was a random that I was supposed to get to like back in January.
Right.
Because a lot of people share, you know, their stuff.
Yeah, they share. They're sharing passwords. That's absolutely right. So, people admit the password they share the most are with streaming services, Amazon accounts. 38% said even their personal email, and 80% of people say they use 6 streaming services, but pay for only half of them.
Well, that's the thing. So Netflix, the guy who heads up Netflix, said that they have 200 million paid subscribers, but they expect on any given day 400 million people
watching
Netflix. Yeah.
So, I'm sure they know what's going on.
They do.
Yeah.
They're trying to get, you know,
get around it.
Get
so,
around it.
Anyway, if you have password anxiety, the theory is you are not alone.
I have a major account, like a financial account, that I have no idea how to get at.
Yeah.
And I try, and then you, after 3 tries, it locks
you're
you
locked out.
And the only way I'll know, I mean, it's a major one.
Yeah.
Like, I can't, I have no, and it drives me so crazy that I give up.
Right.
And then I'm just like, screw it, who cares?
And I think a lot of people, you know, like with this vaccine, you created your account at Walmart, at CVS, at Walgreens.
Hy-Vee.
I mean, all these places. And I was writing these things down. I was just going crazy because I was like, I don't have an online account.
Right.
I hope people are helping their elders with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, here's a theory. Music, McGill University researchers say that music is as addictive as fast food, money, and even alcohol and drugs. Why? Scientists say pleasant music that you like trigger an area of the brain called the nucleus accumbens, the reward center.
Yep.
The same place that, you know, fast food, money, and booze and drugs trigger.
I think we can attest to this because how many times did we listen to Driver's License? How many times have we listened to the Justin Bieber, Ariana Grande song since
stuck
COVID
with you.
Stuff?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we listened to the same 5 songs and we still feel good about it.
We feel real good, and it's good medicine.
It is great medicine. Yeah. That is just so true.
It is. So the nucleus accumbens produces that feel good dopamine chemical.
Place. Yeah. All right. So I believe it.
Nucleus accumbens. That sounds like a Disney song.
I know, it does. Doesn't it? It's Hakuna Matata.
Okay. Now, this is might seem like contradictory theory, but
contradictory.
This is research from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School.
Okay.
Admit that cyberchondria has made the value of internet medical searches controversy, yet researchers say patients who use Dr. Google to find out what's wrong with them will often get the right diagnosis. Hmm. And it's the rare person that suffers from cyberchondria, where they come in and they are convinced they have cancer of something.
I believe that because I've researched some things and you kind of find out, all right, it's not that. It might be this. It's not that. Yeah. I think you find out, I mean, just like any other thing that you're researching and trying to find out information on.
Here's what they did. The researchers to come, they asked 5,000 people to read a short case vignette.
Okay.
That described a number of symptoms and then imagine that someone close to you was experiencing them. And they had to make two diagnoses before and after looking up the symptoms online. And the cases that they gave them for fake, you know, uses were mild to severe, but some of them described like a cold, heart attack, stroke. And so they asked, they reported, you know, they said, what would you do? And most people were able to correctly diagnose some of the cases after doing a Dr. Google search, you know, on the internet.
I love that. Yeah. All right. I mean, this isn't anything people should rely on.
No. And what the doctors are saying from this research is our work suggests it's okay to tell our patients to Google it. This starts to form the evidence base that there's not a lot of harm in it. In fact, there may be good because maybe people are not coming in unless you have a patient who suffers from cyberchondria.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where everything, I've got cancer of the brain.
Right.
You know,
I've never.
You know what I mean?
That's really extreme.
Yeah.
I think
it is.
Mm-hmm.
OK, this is a theory that I wish would be happening before Memorial Day. But I guess maybe you have some vacation time. But psychologically, the impact of a long weekend, a 3-day weekend on people is tremendous. The benefits of 3-day weekends.
I told you Spain is doing a test.
Of doing 4-day work
weeks. Of doing 4-day work weeks. Mm-hmm. I think it's unbelievable, the difference.
The positive long-term effects on your mental and physical health cannot be underestimated. That's right, mm-hmm. Julia. And so maybe in your new job that you're going to have this year, maybe you're going to negotiate a 4-day work week. Maybe that's going to be something that you do.
I hope so. Were you reading my text or something?
Yeah, I know it.
Okay.
But
4-day work week would be, I worked at one of my jobs was 4 days. I thought I had scored the lottery. I mean, it makes all the difference.
Did you have to work 10-hour days?
No, I did my work, but you just did it. I just did it in 4 days.
In 2018, a company in New Zealand implemented an 8-week trial for 4-day work week, which saw people, you know, coming in. And the results were overwhelmingly positive, not only for the people that worked there, but also the bosses. Before they did this trial, 54% of people felt they could balance home and work.
Okay.
After the 8-week trial, that number jumped to 79%.
Wow.
Across the board.
This would help women so much.
Oh, I know. And it seems like people can do that in 4 days. Anyway, I recommend, you know, maybe trying to do this.
Negotiate
it.
People are looking for jobs.
It gives you a clearer mind and a happier outlook, and it benefits the bosses and it benefits the worker. And it's just psychologically and mentally and physically
a happier place.
Yeah.
I like that.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know if we're going to get there, but
well,
keep in mind, maybe you never know. If you have a position, you might be able to negotiate that.
Absolutely. That's something, if they don't want to give you more money or,
right. How about a 4-day work week?
Right.
And get everything done and dazzle you in 4 days.
Mm-hmm. Name that tune.
How are we ever going to do that here?
Well, it's unfortunate because we have to work to 6 o'clock on a Friday afternoon every bloody week. So, Tuffy.
I used to work with somebody in radio that would tape interviews in advance and then basically play it for his last hour of the show so he could get out an hour early.
Well, that's a brilliant idea.
We would like to start doing that. Who do we speak to?
We could do our show from 2 to 5 on Fridays.
Right. Okay. All right, listen, we will be right back. We've just got a great story about the rise of Amanda Gorman. there's a party today. Taylor Kitsch is 40 and Christopher Maloney is 60. And yesterday there was a photo of him, Holly posted it, of him on the set of Law & Order Organized Crime with a very lot of big booty going on. And so
he has a big booty?
Well, the photo of it, you know.
Did he gain weight? Has he been off CSI for a while or something?
It's Law & Order.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Law & Order, so yes.
Get your story straight,
Get your show straight. Anyway, he responded, someone said, why do you have so much cake in your pants? And he said, sure, big birthday, 60, big boy, 200 pounds, big cake. So kind of funny. Anyway, okay, so the rise and rise of Amanda Gorman. So she is the poet laureate, youngest poet laureate to ever speak at a presidential inauguration. She's the May cover girl of Vogue magazine.
She looks gorgeous.
Photographed by Annie Leibovitz.
Okay.
And I don't know where they are, but check out the photos. They're absolutely amazing. But here's just a little story about this from, I think it's Lara.
Oh, good. Us.
Also this morning, Amanda Gorman, the 23-year-old poet who dazzled with her words at the presidential inauguration, is Vogue magazine's next cover star. Shot by the one and only Annie Leibovitz, Gorman will appear on the May issue of Vogue, and inside is interviewed about her rise to fame and incredible journey. Gorman says, quote, I've learned it's okay to be afraid, and what's more, it's okay to seek greatness. And she sure has found it. Gorman's book, The Hill We Climb, debuted at number one on USA Today's bestseller list, an historic first for a book of poetry. If you want to read more from Amanda, pick up the May issue of Vogue on newsstands April 20th.
That would make your Aunt Marlene so happy that a book of poetry debuted at number one.
Beyond.
Because she was such a fan of good poets, and she would love Amanda Gorman.
She would love her. No kidding, Lori.
Anyway, it's really a beautiful photo. And then we had talked about earlier that we'd posted the trailer for Cher and the Loneliest Elephant, which will be on the Smithsonian Channel on April 22nd and then streaming on Paramount Plus. But here's just a little of the trailer.
Okay.
Cher, this morning we have an exclusive first look at the trailer for her latest project. It's called Cher and the Loneliest Elephant. The documentary follows the music icon as she travels to Pakistan to help save Kavan, a 4-ton malnourished elephant who lit up social media for exposing mistreatment animals face in captivity. Here's a look.
You have to walk up the long road into the zoo, and I could see him from the distance. He was shackled. He was suffering. Elephants are just like we are. They're so family-oriented and emotional. And so I wanted to free him. We just didn't stop fighting.
And you can watch the full rescue operation of Kavan unfold when the world premiere of the Smithsonian Channel's Cher and the Loneliest Elephant starts streaming Earth Day. That's April 22nd over on Paramount Plus.
I would totally watch that. I saw elephants in the wild.
Yeah,
and it is...
It's spectacular.
I can't even tell you how amazing it is to see elephants in
the wild.
That's
just so sweet.
Rocco,
where'd you see them?
It's the Serengeti.
Well, I saw them in the Serengeti, and then we also saw them at Lake Manyara, which was the first day that we were on our photographic, the safari. But yeah, we're in our two Range Rovers, and our guide, Madafa's like, he held up his hand. And he's like, stop, stop, stop. So both trucks stopped, and we could hear just this huge thundering, crunching. It sounded like trees were being snapped in half, because they were, in fact, being snapped in half as this herd of elephants came through and crossed this tiny road that we were on. First, it was a big elephant.
Right.
And then it was a couple more kind of, and then it like the teenage elephants. It was like that scene in the Jungle Book. And then a mama came through, and they're in a single file with a baby, on the tail. They put
right.
And then the last, and I mean, there were like 11 or 12, and the last elephant to come through is the big bull carrying, bringing up the rear, just like any good
daddy-o would.
Protector would. Yes. You'd be the last.
Right.
It was just amazing. And they didn't care at all about us, and they just were. And then we saw them in the Serengeti and stuff, and they're always in a big family.
I love that, Lori. I just love that image.
I know, and people, they're very worried about the elephants, you guys.
What's going on?
In Africa, yeah, that they may, yeah, they're very endangered, and, you know, people are killing them for the tusks. And
right.
It is really, like, true that elephants mourn, and they remember, and they bury the bones.
Right.
And they're just, like, really, they're just the greatest animal. They really are. And I love that Cher is on top of it, but with, you know, there was one elephant at a time, you know.
Well, look at what we did with the bald eagle.
Yeah, I know. But
maybe
it's a little bit different because people are.
They don't follow the rules.
Yeah.
I know.
Remember that great book, Water for Elephants?
Oh. I just read something about that Sarah the other Grun. Day, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
Is that who wrote that book, Lori?
Sarah Grun.
Oh,
yeah.
I love
terrible
it.
Movie.
Terrible with Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson.
Don't bother with that one.
It was the worst.
Watch Sweet Dreams and learn about Patsy Cline instead.
I wrote that down.
What?
Sweet Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then James Hampton passed away today, you guys. If you looked at his photo,
you would know who
he was.
You
would totally recognize him. Rocco, look at him. That actor.
Okay.
James Hampton. He's been in a million TV shows, movies. He was a good buddy with Burt Reynolds. Anyway, just a great guy.
Everybody, have a great night. Right? We're levitating.
We're going to try it. We got sports to watch.
Yeah, we do. We'll be back tomorrow.
Job done. Off you go.